All right, I know it's breakfast time, but it is New Year's Eve, and we're ready here to bring out the champagne. You might be waiting a little longer before popping the cork. Maybe you're still thinking about whether you want to toast with the cheap stuff, nothing wrong with that, or with something finer. NPR's Allison Aubrey joined us to explain the difference. Oh, that's a nice.
Yeah, the drama of the pop, right?
I mean, I love that sound. That alone makes me feel like we're celebrating something.
That's
But
right.
talk to me about what's inside the bottle. I'm always curious when I'm at a party or something like
Well,
that.
you know, a big part of the splash is the effervescence, the bubbles. They kind of tickle your nose and sting your throat. And as those little bubbles surface to the top, they're actually doing something really important.
So this is some kind of hint of whether we're drinking the good stuff or something cheap. It's all about the bubbles.
Yeah, well, the bubbles can be a really good clue. This is actually a nice bottle of sparkling here. And what I want you to do is to look into the glass, look into the flute, if you will.
Okay.
And you can see the steady stream of bubbles rising to the
Yeah.
top, right? Well, this
Yeah.
is good. The bubbles are actually transferring all of the aroma from the glass up to your nose, sort of heightening the sensory experience of it all. Now, with the good stuff, with fine bubbly, these bubbles will last and last down to your very last sip. But in sharp contrast, if it's cheap bubbly, then the bubbles tend to stream out of the glass very quickly. 1 minute they're here, the next minute they're gone.
Okay, well, you were very nice to have brought a good bottle here. I'm seeing the bubbles still streaming. Why does that mean that this is a fine champagne?
Well, it has to do with the technique, how the bubbly's made. I really wanted to understand this, so I visited a vineyard in New York State in the Finger Lakes region. It's called Chateau Frank, part of Constantin Frank. And I was given a tour there by the third generation winemaker, Fred Frank.
What we're looking at right here are thousands and thousands of bottles of sparkling wine that have been aging on the yeast. So the French call this entourage.
He held one bottle up. It was a 2006 vintage. He held it up to the light. I see little bits floating around in there. What
Right,
exactly
those are
are
the
those?
yeast. Those little bits or the cloudiness are the yeast cells.
And they actually help explain how Frank coaxes so many of these wonderful tiny bubbles out of his sparkling wines. You see, inside each of these bottles, Frank is deliberately capturing all of the bubble-producing carbon dioxide that's made naturally in the bottle during fermentation.
We bottle these wines with sugar and yeast added and put this crown cap on, so each bottle becomes its own fermentation vessel.
Now, this is completely different from cheap bubblies. They're fermented in huge vats really quickly, and sometimes the carbon dioxide gas is just injected in like a carbonated soft drink or a seltzer water. And so, by comparison, the traditional champagne method that Frank uses is time-consuming and labor-intensive, but he says it's worth it.
The benefit of this method is higher quality sparkling wine.
Now, there's lots of romance with champagne, right? The bubbles have been likened to pearls, and it's been said drinking champagne is like drinking the stars.
Tiny bubbles.
This is sound familiar.
Love it.
But I have to tell you, David, it is not all celebration. There's a bit of an international dispute brewing here over
Allison, you bring champagne, you bring music. This is wonderful. But international dispute, what's going on?
Well, you see on the label of the Chateau Frank bubbly I've brought here, which I mentioned was produced in New York State, what do you see that it says here in the bottom left-hand side of the label?
All right, I'll take a look. Bottom left-hand side. It says Méthode Champenoise, if that's my French accent, or maybe it's not a good one.
Méthode Champenoise, it actually means champagne method, right? It's made in the champagne method, and this kind of tells consumers in the know, hey, this bottle of bubbly is worth a little higher price because of the technique used to produce it. But here's the issue. The French do not want to share this term champagne.
It's theirs. They want
it's
ownership of it.
It's theirs. And I was trying to understand this position, so I reached out to French champagne maker Bruno Paillard. Now, the Champagne region is about a 90-minute drive from Paris. And Paillard says what makes the wine from here so unique is not just the grapes or the technique. It's also the climate and the soil, what the French call terroir.
Champagne is a wine coming from the Champagne region, and you cannot separate that.
Paillard says to be champagne, it must be produced in this very specific area, and everything about the process is governed by strict rules.
We think that the Champagne is our identity, and it should not be misused. It should not be, in a way, stolen.
The French are very serious. They've hired a politically connected guy here in Washington. His name is Sam Heitner, to really press this issue. I met up with Sam at a wine store here in town, and he told me right now almost half of all the sparkling wine sold in the U.S. is labeled as champagne, even though it doesn't come from France.
I don't know where this wine came from this label. It says California sparkling champagne, with champagne and brut cuvée much larger than California. And so it takes a second look at the label to make sure you know exactly what you're purchasing.
So you think it's pretty confusing?
I think that they are misleading the U.S. consumer.
And Heitner says now there are negotiations between the EU and the U.S. to resolve this issue through legal channels.
Okay, Allison, so it sounds like the really important lesson here is if you care about where your bubbly is coming from, read the label and read it closely. I mean, just the word champagne doesn't mean anything. You got to read a lot.
That's absolutely right. Read the label. But you know what? There's one more thing I've discovered on this hardship reporting
Very,
assignment.
Yeah, difficult work.
It's about how best to pour champagne. And since we're only hours away from the big toast of the year, right?
Yeah, you're going to... Whoa,
oh,
hello.
Here it comes.
I love the countdown. You're getting us in the mood already.
All right, I thought maybe you could pour us a glass, David.
You're going to talk me through it?
I'm going to talk you through it. Well, okay. How do you normally pour champagne?
I mean, I kind of learned you tip the glass and pour it in so you don't get so many bubbles.
Ah.
I mean, and so the pour is gentle. But you tell me. I'm ready
you know
for
what?
A lesson.
I'm actually pretty shocked here because the traditional way is to pour sort of vertically, straight up and down. This is the way the French do it. This is the way you'd see it poured in a French restaurant. But a French chemist has discovered that if you do it just the way you said, sort of like beer, tilt the glass, pour it down the side.
Like 45 degrees
that's
here?
That's right. Or maybe 30. You actually preserve about 25% more of those bubbles. And remember, we talked about that's how you get all that lovely effervescence up to the nose, right?
Right. That's exactly why I've always done it, because I wanted to preserve all of that, yeah.
So there you have it. Looks like you've been pouring champagne the right way for a long time.
Yeah, you know,
though the French would disagree. The French chemist tells me that this finding is very unpopular in France.
Well, I, at the risk of annoying the French, I am going diagonal here. I'm going to, can I pour you a glass?
Absolutely.
All right, there we go. Pour. Handing it over to you. Alrighty. Watch the microphones here, I guess.
All right.
Do we do a toast?
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Here we go.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year a few hours early.
You got it.
All right.
NPR's Allison Aubrey.
Thank you so much, David.
This is NPR News.